Now, there was a discussion last week about a tweet sent by the Environmental Protection Agency, which recommended that in order to cut our greenhouse gas emissions, we could slowly reduce our red meat intake. The EPA then decided to delete the tweet. In a statement to us, the EPA told us that to reduce this complex debate to a single tweet would diminish the seriousness of the discussion that we need to have. Well, Chagas has been looking at this question of emissions from food as part of an All-Ireland research project on what the Irish public is currently eating compared to what is recommended for both personal and planetary health. And it shows that a reduction in meat intake and an increase in vegetables would significantly reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. And one of the researchers from Chagas, Dr. Sinead McCarthy, joins me now. Good morning, Sinead. Thanks a million for coming in. You have a PhD in public health, nutrition, and for 10 years you managed many of the national food consumption surveys in Trinity. And for Chagas, you're involved in this research. Before we start, just for the sake of full transparency, who funded this research?
Thanks for having me in, Ella, and delighted to come in this morning and discuss this very important topic with you. This research has been funded by the Department of Agriculture through what's known as their firm funding food research instrument. All of the research that I'll discuss with you today is undertaken in collaboration with other universities such as Queen's, UCD and UCC.
Any industry funding?
There is no industry funding whatsoever.
So just thinking about it, in the past, dietary guidelines, as I remember them anyway, were all about nutrition and health. And the basic message was always eat more fruit and vegetables. But now we obviously need to think about the sort of a parallel thing, which is our greenhouse gas emissions from the food that we eat. That is the core of what your research looked at. What is a sustainable diet, both for our health and for planetary health?
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose the food pyramid was launched just over 30 years ago. And what's in that then is pretty much the same, only for a few small changes now, and still very much applies in terms of health. And the food pyramid is designed such that if we eat the balance as described in the pyramid, we will get a healthy diet that gives us all our nutrients that we require. So what we decided to look at then was, if we follow these healthy dietary guidelines that are outlined in the food pyramid, is that also more sustainable? Or do we need to put a different layer, if you like, onto the pyramid to bring in that sustainability piece when it comes to sustainable diets?
And when you say sustainable, what you're meaning is the greenhouse gas emissions from the foods that are recommended.
Exactly, yeah. And that's only one metric involved in looking at sustainable diets as well. There's water use and many other measures. But for this particular study, we just looked at the greenhouse gas emissions.
And what did you find?
So what we found was, if you think of the pyramid as being a very stable structure with a wide base on it, we have the fruit and veg at the bottom, and you should be eating most of your food from the bottom of the pyramid. The recommendation is at least 5 and has increased to 7 recently. At the moment, we're eating about 2, 2.5. So you can imagine that very narrow base, it's left that pyramid unstable. As we move up the pyramid, we're fairly okay when it comes to the whole grains and the cereal shelf. We're fairly good when it comes to the dairy shelf as well. We're eating there or thereabouts within what's recommended. When we come up to the meat and protein shelf, we're just slightly outside by about a portion a day of what we should be eating. And then fats and oils, not too bad. But when we get up to the very top of the shelf, we're eating 600 grams a day from the top of the shelf. Nearly 3 times more of what we're eating from fruit and veg. So you can see it's top heavy and weak at the bottom. So it's as if
so
it's
we're
going
not listening
topple.
To the recommendations.
It's as if it's going to topple. Yeah. So what we looked at then was, if we increase the fruit and veg, decrease the meat slightly and halve our intake of the discretionary foods as they're known from the top of the pyramid, what would the carbon consequences be, if you like? And we could reduce, we could take about 1.6 kilos of carbon out of our diets or out of what we're consuming if we were to reduce our intake by that amount.
I read a presentation of yours and it listed the carbon emission factors for different foods. So that's the amount of CO2 equivalent per kilogram. Carrots were 0.5, potatoes were 1.5, cheese was 9.2 and red meat was 32.4.
But we don't eat individual foods. And that's one of the really important points to make. You don't go home, have dinner and just have a plate of meat or just have a plate of carrots. We have a combination of foods on that plate. And that's the piece that's important. And that's why we need to eat a combination of foods to get the balance right. So you need your protein from your meat. You need all of the inherent healthy elements that we get from fruit and veg. So the phytochemicals that give fruit and veg their colour is what makes them healthy. They're very high in vitamins, they're also low in calories, so they help fill us up.
And I can hear the vegetarians and vegans out there saying, no, I can get my protein other ways, so we'll just make sure that they're accounted for. But yes, with regard to the takeaway...
just on the protein piece, though, you need to eat four times the amount of a plant protein to get the same amount. So you'd need to eat about 400 grams of chickpeas to get the same amount of protein as what you'll get in 100 grams of red meat.
Overall, do we need to cut red meat in order to reduce our carbon emissions?
Only slightly. We need to get the shelf back into balance. We need to eat the appropriate amounts for what we need, for our requirements. So we need to bring, we need to reduce the protein shelf by about, if we reduce it by about one portion, that'll give us a saving of approximately 1.5 kilos of carbon per day. If we
that's
have,
one portion per day you're talking about.
That's one portion per day. If we have our sweets, chocolates, treats, alcohol especially, and this part of the food pyramid we don't hear discussed very much in this sustainability debate, but we're eating far in excess of our requirements. There actually isn't a requirement for the treats. So if we have that, which is still above what's recommended, we can have a saving of about 1 kilo a day of carbon. And just to put, I think it's really important in this whole sustainability debate that we absolutely have to consume food. We can't do without it. And not to go back to hard times 3 years ago of COVID, but when we were isolated and locked down, food became the primary objective in our lives. Getting to the shops, getting our foods were really important. We didn't need to drive beyond 2 kilometres. We didn't need to take flights. So we have to eat. So the carbon cost of our diet is a given. We have to do that.
But is it the case that if you want, if you've got a balanced diet, but if you want to address this question of reducing your greenhouse gas emissions, that the quickest and easiest way to do that is to cut red meat?
No. No, it's to reduce red meat and have the discretionary foods as well.
The Irish food pyramid, as you said, is 30 years old and it looks just at this question of public health. Is it time that we looked at it again? I mean, 30 years is a long time ago. But and also integrate what you're talking about, which is these other ways of looking at it, which is about the carbon emissions.
Yeah, and that is happening as well. And I think the important aspect is to not over-focus on one shelf, and it's about getting the balance from all of the shelves. Revision, so that from a nutritional perspective, it's still fit for purpose. And as beings, we haven't changed that much in the last 30 years that our requirements have changed. But we do very much need to change our behaviour and align what we're consuming with the recommendations. In terms of sustainability, a lot of work is going on in that space. There was a report launched earlier this year by the Climate and Health Alliance, and the recommendations that they're making for a more climate friendly and sustainable diet is not very different from what the current food pyramid is showing. I think what could be helpful for consumers in terms of having choice for everybody out there for whatever type of diet you'd like to choose is that if on each shelf there was an indication of which foods are higher and which foods are lower in terms of their carbon footprint, and do that for every one of the shelves, because all of the foods we have ultimately have a carbon cost, whether it's low or high.
Do you think there is trust in the food pyramid? Because from what you said earlier, people aren't following it for a reason.
I don't think it's a lack of trust. I think it's that huge area of consumer behaviour, which would be an entirely different radio interview, Ella. We get stuck in habits, and changing our habits can be very difficult. We eat for taste. We're primarily driven by taste rather than health. And the food pyramid is probably promoted more so on a basis of health. So perhaps that taste piece, helping people in their daily lives to incorporate it into their lives, bringing your apple in your handbag or school bag as the snack rather than maybe some salty, high fat crisps or something like that.
And you mentioned in it this idea of a realistic and culturally appropriate solutions for a sustainable diet. So you're not just looking at the facts and the figures. Talk to me a bit about that. What do you mean by culturally appropriate?
So culturally appropriate is one that fits in with the culture of a population or where you're living. So it's about making recommendations for foods that are available to you and foods that you know how to use, foods that you know how to cook with. So say, for example, for some people might not know what to do with lentils. So making a recommendation for a sustainable diet that's just based on lentils wouldn't be culturally appropriate for some populations. Similarly, in the Eat Lancet report that kind of launched a lot of these discussions, they recommended replacing potatoes with rice. Now, while rice consumption has gone up in Ireland, we have a love for our potato. And that's our cultural piece, if you like. It's also grown domestically. It's not flown 4,000 miles for us to consume it.
And on the question of food miles, we've a tweet in here, a text rather, saying, why aren't we talking about food miles and flying vegetables such as avocados halfway around the world as part of this conversation? Surely less food miles is just as important as reducing meat intake.
If food miles is so, as I was saying earlier, the carbon emissions is only one element of a sustainable diet. We can bring in water use, we can bring in food miles, and transportation. It doesn't make sense that you can get something from thousands of miles away and consume it here. One of the big recommendations in terms of sustainable diets is eating locally produced foods and seasonal foods, and that's a good place to start
if you can find them.
If you can find
them. In case of vegetables, it's actually quite hard in Ireland.
Yeah.
Another text. Please, can you ask Sinead about infant feeding? In terms of infants drinking full fat milk from age one, is a healthier, more sustainable option than them drinking follow-on formula, which has a huge carbon burden in its processing and is unnecessary as per HSE and WHO? Is that correct?
I'm not familiar with the current guidelines for infant feeding. It's about 14 years since I've had to worry about infant feeding.
So you didn't look at the emissions associated with
formula? No, it was just adult food consumption for 18 to 16.
So for people going out this morning on their shop or going into a restaurant and or having takeaway food or whatever, what's the take-home message for them? If they're interested in this one question, which is, how do I pull back? How do I reduce a bit my greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, if you want to combine both healthy eating and greenhouse gas emissions, what I would recommend is look at your plate. And if you imagine half of your plate should be fruit and vegetables, a quarter of your plate should be your protein, and then the other quarter of your plate should be carbohydrate. If you're thinking of in terms of if that protein is meat, approximately the palm of your hand is what a portion size is. So when you're eating your two portions of protein a day, think of two hands. That's the amount of protein that you actually want to consume.
So we're back to what was meat and two veg, but now is, if people are vegetarian, whatever they want, or vegan, the protein and two veg. As being the essence. Yes. Sinead McCarthy, thank you very much for joining us. We're
thank
on 51551. We're back after this.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.